Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful co-host, Keith Glasser. Keith, how are we doing?
Great, how are you?
He's back. It's that time of year. College baseball is right around the corner. And we have the one and only Jonathan Grasse here to chop it up. We're going to do some preseason baseball talk. Welcome to the pod once again, Jonathan. Pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me, as always. Always good to chop it up. This time of the year is exciting, right? We're, about 13 days away when this, airs. I think we'll be about 2 days away or a day or so away. But
A day away.
So be exciting. See how wrong we are. See how right we are. Just take some guesses and we'll see what happens here, right?
That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna make some picks, talk about some teams to watch, and then there's a couple very relevant college baseball topics that we're gonna chop it up about here. But let's start it off with one of those topics. We've got all this conference realignment, which one makes it harder to track where the hell everybody is because everybody's in a different conference now. But I think the big topic with all of this, and we've touched on it before we got started here, but there's going to be wild travel schedules for some of these teams. The ACC's got Stanford and Cal now. That's going to be crazy. You've got the Big Ten with Oregon, UCLA, USC.
Washington.
Washington. Even the Big 12's got some schools that their travel is going to be a little bit funky at times, adding Arizona State and Arizona. But I think from a travel perspective, the Big Ten and the ACC are going to be pretty wild this year. So I'm gonna kick it over to you two to hit on this. Keith, I know you did a little research leveraging the capabilities of artificial intelligence to come up with some very interesting numbers, if you want to start there.
Yeah, I this isn't a complete list, but I did a little bit. I kind of took schools on the coasts in the Big Ten and the ACC and just kind of threw together how many miles we're traveling and more or less came up with the fact that BC is going to be traveling Boston College about 21,000 miles this year. Rutgers in the Big Ten is going to be around 23,000 miles. And then the two big ones, if those aren't big enough for you, Stanford is going to be going 2,400 miles, and Washington took the cake with 24,225 miles of travel this year, which, this is not something we've seen in college baseball ever. And we were just talking about it on the pre-show about how, it's not only is the travel going to be wild and, what does the logistics look like? Like if you're playing on Thursday, when are you leaving realistically? And I thought about this as we were talking about it and I brought it up, like there's a travel curfew in a lot of these games on Sundays. Like, I don't know it. Look, it might not be something that is even relevant during the season, but it's hard to argue that when you have West Coast teams going back home West playing on the East Coast and vice versa, East Coast teams on the West going home, there's going to be some hard travel curfews to make flights. And you might see some funky scores, some ties, some games that are five innings, six innings long, because it's a little bit of a longer. Sundays could be anything. You could end up winning a 10-8 five inning game on a Sunday and getting on a bus and going home, or excuse me, getting on a flight and going home. So I think it's going to be super interesting, that aspect, and seeing how it plays out over the course of the conference season for a lot of these teams, because that's, 24,000 miles. Like, that's absurd. Absurd. We're going from Seattle to the East Coast. We're going from San Francisco to Boston this year. That's never happened. It's out of control.
Yeah, I think it's cool, right? Like, I think, like Andy, you said, it'll be hard to kind of keep track of, all of it. I think at first, like, even looking at a lot of this stuff this week, you're looking at it, you're like, oh, shoot, that's right. I forgot so-and-so's in, in the Big 12 or so-and-so's, now in the ACC. And it's, you're looking at these schedules and it's like, it's pretty wild, to be honest with you. The one thing I said this to these guys yesterday, the one thing I think is going to be really cool to monitor is how do the West Coast teams do going east? Because if you've ever flown before across the country, and I know, you know, these two guys have done it as well. And when you recruit nationally, it's kind of par for the course, but it's tough going from the West Coast to the East Coast. You know, it's way easier going east to west. You know, and when you're looking at, you know, all right, well, you know, if you're Stanford or you're Cal or you're Washington or whoever, UCLA, like when you have to go to, you know, a Penn State or a Clemson, like, you know, you play Friday night at 7 o'clock, like, you know, when are you getting in? Like, because I mean, it would be very difficult, in my opinion, to take a red eye, land Thursday morning, have to go practice, and then have to ask your guys to play three games, you know, in big time atmospheres, big time, you know, games, you know, in conference play. You know, and then how does that translate also not only to Friday night, but how does that translate to Sunday? You know, when, you know, their clocks are going to be a little bit off. You know, you're worn down from the travel. Like, you know, obviously there's no excuses, but it's, you know, it's something to monitor. I think is as we get into, you know, conference play, and then the first few weekends, maybe not so much, you know, maybe, you know, when UCLA or USC have to go to Rutgers in the middle of March or Michigan in the middle of March, like that's probably going to be a, you know, daunting ask of them. But, you know, even when the weather kind of does turn, what does it look like for them to continuously go 24,000 miles over the course of the year, you know, flying? What does that look like for their stamina when we get into the, you know, the dog days of later part of April, early May, into mid-May?
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, you wonder if it adds up too. Right. Like, it's one thing on one weekend, but, you know, if you're Stanford, you just got to travel so much. Like, I feel like you're at a significant disadvantage having to go across the country to play the vast majority of your competition. You know, it's one thing for like BC and those guys to go out there one time, maybe twice. You know, BC being where they are, having to go to Miami and schools like that, like, that's why their travel is as big as it is. But that back and forth is going to be interesting to see how teams hold up.
I think the one thing too to think about, and I know Keith brought this up earlier today, we were texting about it. I don't think in the Big Ten it's going to matter as much, because you have the Big Ten tournament in Omaha, which is, you know, directly in the middle of the country. So it is what it is. But like the ACC tournament's in Raleigh. So, you know, Stanford, you know, if they're on the road the last week, and that there's no classes, guys are out of school, so it could be, you know, but a little bit different. You know, you're going to know in advance, hey, we're definitely in the tournament. But, you know, you could have to fly, even at, let's say, call it the second weekend of the year, or second to last weekend of the year, right? You're going to have to fly. You fly back to Stanford. You play your last home weekend, and then you're going back to Raleigh to play on, in, you know, in some instances, it's on as Wednesday. So, you know, you're going to get done your game on Sunday, and you're jumping basically right on a plane, you know, first thing Monday morning. Whether you're in the tournament or not, you probably are going home after the ACC tournament, back across the country. Again, these miles aren't counted on Keith's grid here. Back to, you know, to Stanford. If you don't host a regional and you got to go back on the road for a regional, if they throw you in, you know, Coral Gables or Tallahassee or wherever, that's another, you know, 12,000 miles basically, because 3,000 each way, like on your trip. Like, that's a lot of extra miles. Like, and now you're supposed to win in a pod with, you know, four of the, you know, the best 64 teams in the country. And then you know, and so on and so forth, like obviously with the Supers and then obviously to Omaha, but like you're asking a lot of these guys, you know, with this travel schedule. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, definitely. And this is the first time anybody's going to be going through it. So, it'll actually be interesting to look at it next year if you see schools like Stanford and Cal and Washington and, you know, UCLA, USC, like if it stays aligned the way that it is, which there's definitely talk about things changing again for the 2026 season. But do you start to try to stay on the East Coast for an extended period of time? Like, how much do you really care about class? Like, that's a big question. Like, if you got UNC and NC State, can you play a midweek game and play those back-to-back weekends and keep kids on the East Coast? I wonder if they're going to start to do it. Baseball is such a different beast. Like if it's basketball and you're Stanford and you need to go play Wake and UNC, you play Friday, Sunday, you're not flying back home. But for baseball, it's just a different animal. Like you play your conference games every single weekend. It's not against one team. You're not doubling up to get your conference games out of the way. I'll be curious to see if they make any adjustments in the future, because I have a feeling that looking after the season's complete and people get the chance to digest it, that the travel might just be too daunting for these schools, for a variety of different reasons, not to mention cost. I mean, there's no way they're not spending significantly more money than they've ever spent in these baseball programs. And I know that some of these baseball programs have plenty of money to go around, but you know, still a business, right? And these schools still need to operate functionally. You know, taking four or five trips to the East Coast with, you know, for this year, 40 guys plus staff, plus support staff, like it's not a cheap ticket.
Here's my one question. Are we going to finally not hear from the West Coast contingency about the RPI this year?
From the teams that have to fly east? Yeah. From the UC Santa Barbaras and stuff? Yeah, I think we're still going to hear it.
I mean, like, you still play those guys, like, you know, you're playing them early in the year. You may play them on a midweek. Like, there's no more excuses now, guys. Like, here it is. Here we go. The east of the Mississippi bias, as I like to say.
Oh, it's going to be a whirlwind. That's for sure. All right, let's talk some teams here. I want to start with some sleepers. Kick it over to you, Jonathan, to start here. Give me a couple teams that we need to keep an eye on. Not necessarily Omaha bound. If you've got a sleeper pick, go ahead and throw it out. But just some teams that you think might either sneak up on some people, or some teams that you think got a chance to do some damage here that aren't necessarily kind of those blue bloods that are going to show up in the top 25, top 10, top 15 every year.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll kind of hit it two different ways. I think Duke's somebody, and not that they're a sleeper by any stretch of the imagination with what Coach Paul done there, but I think they're going to be really good. They're really old. They did a really good job in the portal. They're kind of, you know, when I wrote my eight for Omaha, like they were right on the outskirts. You know, again, not an unfamiliar, you know, territory for them in the last few years. You know, they've done a phenomenal job there. I think the one that's really intriguing this year is Troy. Troy is loaded. They were pretty young last year. Coach Mead did a phenomenal job with that group. They got that thing going in a hurry. And I think they are in some, if you look at some publications, they're in the top 25 in some groups, but I think they're one that you're like, hey, that's somebody that, you know, could sneak up on some people. You know, obviously Southern Miss is Southern Miss. They, you know, they just wash, rinse, repeat. They really don't get crushed by the portal for whatever reason. Their guys stay there. They love it there. You know, and I think the other one too for me is East Carolina. You know, can they finally get over that, like that final little hump? You know, I mean, they've been so close. Cliff's had them right there knocking on the door. I mean, two times they were all went away from Omaha, I think, at least two times. You know, they've just done, he's done such a good job there. Again, it's not even a, there's never a rebuild, you know, at a place like that. Like they've just done such a good job recruiting. Their guys love it there. I think they're, again, somebody to kind of to look at, you know, and say, all right, we're going to have a shot maybe to get to Omaha again. The other interesting part for me is I think, you know, Tennessee is an interesting piece, because I think, you know, we've seen like kind of a trend for a long time before the portal really got going a few years ago. We saw a trend basically like, you know, teams that got to Omaha and especially got to that final, you know, weekend in Omaha, that, you know, that national championship. It seemed to be like it took them a little bit to get going, right? We saw with Florida last year, you know, they took a while to get going. They obviously, you know, had a phenomenal year at the end, but it takes a lot out of you, that run, you know, and they kind of were at the, you know, at the peak of the mountain for the last few years, you know, coming off, finally getting it done. They get the natty, you know, what do they look like? I think that's one of the ones that I'm kind of intrigued to see is like, you know, what's, and listen, the SEC is loaded again, like loaded, but you know, what does Tennessee look like coming off a national championship, coming off that run? You know, Tony's obviously going to have that edge with them, but you know, it's, they did it now. So now, you know, now what do you do, you know, kind of next? So that's kind of where I'm at. Nothing, I'm not really inventing the wheel here. I know it's pretty vanilla, but it's kind of where I'm at.
ECU is an interesting one for me because this is, I think this is the first time in recent memory where they're not a preseason top 25 team. And they did get hit by the portal. You know, they lost a couple of their top guys, but I think everything that you said stands true that like it's been a machine for a while. You know, Cliff and Jeff Palumbo have done such a good job of bringing players in there that I wonder if them not having that target on their back, you know, because I mean, they've showed up in the top 10, in the top 15 in recent years preseason, and they've been on the cusp of it. I wonder if them not being as highly thought of as they've been in the past, I wonder if that actually plays an advantage to them. And like, it's probably the first time that he can walk into the locker room and be like, hey dudes, guys aren't, they don't think you're that good this year. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. I like the Duke thing. I'm going to get on that a little bit later, but Coach Glass, what do you got? Some sleepers, some teams to keep an eye on.
Sorry, it took me a little longer to unclick my mute button. I wrote down four. One I don't necessarily think is I don't think Santa Barbara is that much of a sleeper per se. You know, they have a front end dude who throws on Fridays who's legit. And they've been a regional team for the last couple of years, but I think that they're kind of that mid-major team, not in a big time conference, that can seriously make waves. And they have done for the last couple of years. I wrote down Charleston and Northeastern. You know, last year we were kind of high on the Northeastern train, and then I think they went 2-Q in the conference tournament and then did not get a regional bid. And neither did Charleston last year. And both of them had phenomenal years. I think Charleston won 40 games and Northeastern was damn close to 40. You know, I think it's a little bit more of a revenge tour for those two ball clubs this year to kind of get out and prove that like they're really good baseball teams who can compete with, you know, some of the best in the country, even though they're kind of considered mid-majors. You know, so I have those two. And then the one that, you know, we were talking about it today via text, I think an interesting one to me is I think Penn State is going to make a little bit of noise in the Big Ten this year, as opposed to previous years. You know, they have some guys returning that are good. They went into the portal and got some guys, and they have some really good players that are from the state of Pennsylvania that most people probably don't know this, but is a pretty rich baseball state, that are now Nittany Lions and playing in Happy Valley. So I think, you know, I'm not going to be shocked if, you know, I'm not saying they're going to go to Omaha and win the whole thing, but I think the Mike Gambino's second year there at Penn State, I think they can make some noise in the Big Ten and shake things up a little bit when it comes regional time at the end of the year.
Yeah, I like the Penn State call. Like I said, I don't know if they're going to Omaha, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if they pop up in a regional. I mean, a lot of people might not know this, haven't listened to it, but like Nick Puccio, who's the recruiting coordinator there, he had a huge hand in Northeastern's success. So like he's no stranger to finding high-end talent and being able to develop it. And I think between him, Gambino's experience, and they have other guys on that staff like Wheels, who they've been around college baseball for a long time. They're all really good at what they do. And I think year two, it's going to be really interesting to see if they make that jump, because I think it's coming regardless. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if you saw them in the top three or four in the Big Ten and found a way to get into the NCAA tournament. I think that's a freaking great call, Keith. A couple of teams that I'm on, I'm a super big fan of how they play. They're returning a bunch of guys. They're uber athletic. Coach Suplee won't like this one, but I think San Diego might make some noise. I think they're probably the best team by a decent margin. Portland's going to be really good again. But in the West Coast Conference, I think they're the best team. And the way they play, I think, allows them to go and play in a lot of different types of games. They're kind of my – if I was going to give you like a sleeper Omaha pick, that's probably not on a lot of people's radar. Like, that team is interesting to me. And I got to say, I'm a little bit hopeful. I kind of want to see Dallas Baptist breakthrough.
Sure.
And they're, you know, they're not necessarily a sleeper. They're popping up in the top 25. But I think what they do, given that they're, you know, it's a smaller school that doesn't, you know, have a lot of other sports, like baseball is what they do. And they've been really good at it for a while, but I'm going to be really interested to see what they do. And then I'm on the CAA train. I think it's a matter of time before one of those teams gets back to the level that College of Charleston was in like 2013 and 2014, where they're like a super regional quality team. And I think there's three teams in that conference that are on the cusp of doing that, with Charleston, Wilmington's always a big threat, in Northeastern. I think that conference gets slept on a little bit from a baseball perspective, and they probably got dinged a little bit last year because the bottom end of that conference isn't great. But the top four or five teams in that conference every year are really good. And I think Northeastern, Charleston, and Wilmington at this point have kind of separated themselves from the pack. And I'll be really curious to see if one of those guys can get in a regional and make some noise, because I don't think it'll be due to a lack of talent. I think that they stack up specifically on the mound, and could give themselves a chance to make some noise in this whole thing.
I'm rooting for him. I think the one thing with the CAA is that, the to your point, like, the top end is good, but they just beat each other up. And I think sometimes when it comes to committee time, that gets viewed as, you know, how good are they top to bottom, when they all Northeastern beat Charleston, Charleston beat Wilmington, Wilmington beat, like, it goes back and forth. Round and round we go. But like, from a baseball perspective, I think that they're all of those teams are really good.
I think back to what I was saying before about the, you know, the RPI stuff too, like, you know, they can go on the road and take two or three at some of those, you know, bottom, you know, end teams, and it's almost doing nothing or negatively, you know, affecting them. And I think that's a big deal. Like, you know, their reward, quote unquote, for winning two of three at home is that, yeah, we lost eight spots, you know, like, so I think that makes it tough with the committee too, because they're, you know, I mean, you know, probably Charleston and Wilmington could probably have, you know, really high end ones just because of their midweeks and stuff like that. But like, they have to play some of those teams at home, and it, you know, it's a negative effect when they win two of three or even sweep, that it makes it tricky, because then again, you're going to fall into that right on that line of, you know, who's in, who's out. And what we saw last year was they're right on that line of like, yeah, you should be in, but you're not, because it's quote unquote the CAA. And it's like, yeah, but like, it's not that they're not doing enough on the midweek. And I think that's my biggest point here is it's not that they're not doing enough on the midweek, because they're all three of them play their butts off and play really good opponents on the midweek. It's the bottom end of that conference doesn't do them any favors on the weekend, where in the ACC, that doesn't happen. In the SEC, obviously that doesn't happen, but like, it you don't have that huge drop. Even in the Big Ten, like, there's years where there's a big, you know, disparity in terms of the teams, but you're not really getting killed at the bottom, you know, and maybe it's one team. In the CAA, it could be multiple teams, multiple, you know, every year. And I think that's where it gets tricky for them, because year in and year out, for the most part, all three of them teams are regional type teams, but they don't all get in because, like he said, they're beating up on each other. And it's like, well, how good are they actually? And it's like, that's what they're doing in all these other good leagues. It's just they're in a class of their own, and then they have to play these other teams that are killing them in the RPI late in the year.
Well, I think that that brings up another, kind of takes us down another road when you're talking about the at-large bids come tournament time. Like, all these conferences have gotten bigger, right? D1 baseball's got 12 SEC teams in, 10 ACC teams in, and 6 Big 12 and 4 Big 10, right? Those are your quote-unquote power fours. If that's the case, where are those spots available for the fourth place Sunbelt team, who's probably as good as a lot of those teams? Where does that put the second and third place CAA teams? Because to your point, being a part of those conferences, your RPI is built in, right? And you don't get dinged for getting beat by Tennessee on the road. So what those teams do midweek, like Charleston's got to go, like they got to take a game from South Carolina. They got to win a game at Clemson. I think they may have to do that stuff in order to get themselves in the at-large bid, because only one team's going to win that tournament. But there's realistically, if things go the way they went last year, there's three teams in that conference that legitimately had an argument that they should have been in a regional. But does it get even harder now with this conference, the way the conference realignment has worked? Does it get harder for those schools to get in?
I think yes, right? Like, to answer the question, I think yes, because I think the way we've seen the committee, you know, and anyone who watches this show knows my opinion on, you know, last year, the committee and, you know, the decision they made to put Florida in, which I thought was an absolute disgrace. But, you know, if you know, the precedent is there for those conferences. So, like, what makes us think that anything's going to change because you added Oklahoma and Texas this year to the SEC? Like, what's going to, I mean, if you think about it, right? 18, there's 18 in the big, or 16, I'm sorry. So you have 12 in, you have 4 in the SEC out. I mean, if you said, hey, here's $1 million, you can pick all, you pick the 4 that don't get in. A lot of people are losing money on that deal because it's pretty difficult to pick those 4. Like, you know, I mean, you have a few that are like, all right, well, yeah, they're probably not going to get in. But then you get to like number 3 and number 4, and I'm going, well, who the heck's not getting in of that crew? Like, it gets tight quick.
It does. And I think the other thing, too, that bothers me about the selection stuff is, like, I get when the bottom end of the conference isn't great, but like, you're bound by the conference and having to play them. You shouldn't necessarily get dinged because of games you have to play. And I think conversely, it hurts some of those type teams like your Northeasterns and your College of Charleston's, because it's getting to the point, you know, again, like to accentuate it a little bit, Jonathan, where you're talking about like the bottom 4 teams in the SEC don't get in. Who is it? Like, they don't necessarily want to go schedule those mid-major powers, because it's like, if I lose, that could be the difference of us getting in and getting out and being left out or getting in. And we'll just go play someone that we know we can beat. And, you know, our RPI is going to be fine because we're going to turn around and go to Hoover and play each other another 15 times to climb our RPIs. You know, so I think it puts those mid majors in a super tough spot because you're bound by your conference schedule. And then a good portion of those bigger schools don't necessarily want to play because there really is no benefit for them. Because if they win, it's like, yeah, you should have. If you lose, it's like, yeah, that could be the one loss that puts us out. And, you know, it puts them in a super tough place, which I don't think is the best thing for the game in getting, you know, getting the right 64 teams into the tournament at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you know, we've gone back and forth on this too. Like, it's a flawed system. Like you just said, it's a totally flawed system, you know, and I don't agree with, you know, that, you know, what I was just saying, but like you said, it is what it is. Like, if we want to, you know, really make the sport the best it's ever been, like, well, you know, teams shouldn't be canceling games because of RPI in the middle of May, like they are,
right?
You know, and like South Carolina, and I know South Carolina and Clemson do a great job of this, but like, South Carolina should be playing Clemson. Or I'm sorry, South Carolina should be playing College of Charleston. College of Charleston should be playing Clemson. Like, those games should be happening. They're 3, you know, an hour and a half apart and 3 hours apart. Like, They're good for the state. That the state is good if they do that. But in other states, that's not happening, like you said, because they're going, well, if I play so-and-so and lose, if I play Troy and lose, that doesn't do really anything for me. But if Troy goes and, you know, wins on the road at Alabama in the second week of February, third week of February, it's a big deal come May.
Yep. And we gave props to Kansas State last year.
Yeah.
Going on the road and playing
UConn.
Northeastern.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, no, for sure. Interesting enough, I was just looking at it. Charleston doesn't play Clemson this year.
Wow, that's interesting.
They got UNC on the schedule for midweek, so that certainly makes up for it. And I think they play South Carolina twice, but you know, not playing Clemson is interesting. But it's going to be, Keith, I mentioned this earlier, is that I think at a certain point that NCAA needs to decide, like, are you trying to get the best 64 teams in, or are you trying to stay to the heart of what college sports are all about? Because if you're just focused on getting the best 64 in, you're never going to get any of these cool stories that we see happen every single year. You know what I mean? Where you see, you know, a Davidson go to a super regional, a VCU go to a super regional, you know, the Ivy League schools making it to regional finals, like, You're not going to see that kind of stuff, but we are. It does seem like we're moving in the direction of, like, you get a huge benefit by just playing in a better conference, which I understand the value of it. But just saying, like, well, hey, the 12 best teams from the SEC should get in when they, you know, the 12th team went, you know, 10 and 14 in conference, like, you're a below average team in your conference. I think you got to start to ask the question of, like, well, how valuable is that really? Right. You were the mediocre of the best. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I don't know what the answer is, but it's getting to the point with the consolidation that if you're associated with the three big conferences, I think there's a pretty big, in my opinion, there's definitely a gap between the Big 12, ACC and the SEC and everybody else. But, you know, I hope that doesn't go away, because you lose those stories. And every year we see it, every single year we see somebody that nobody's ever heard of show up in a regional final and they're taking some big time school, you know, into the freaking 10th round of the heavyweight fight. And I think that's what makes college sports so cool, is that you can see these quote unquote Cinderella runs, you know, the Indiana States, the Coastal Carolinas, the Stony Brooks,
Fresno State,
Oral Roberts 2 years ago,
Oral Roberts, like, you know, it's.
But I think, like, to your point, though, like, I think they get the recency from Ole Miss in 2022, right? Like,
Florida's the same, yeah, similar.
Ole Miss was dead to rights in 2022, and then they get in because they won the tournament, right? Like, yep. They weren't getting an at-large bid.
Didn't they get an at-large?
Or maybe they did, but they went
last super, team in. I think they were team 64 in, is what they said.
Ended up going super deep in the SEC tournament,
yeah.
And then they get in, they make that run, and then they win the World Series. But they were, like, they needed to make a super deep run. I think they lost in the finals, but, like, they needed to make a super deep run to give them the opportunity to even get into the field of 64, and then they win the whole thing. And I think it gives, you know, credence to the idea that, like, those conferences are just that much better, because, you know, a bottom end team that year in the conference goes on and wins the College World Series. And, you know, like Florida last year, none of us really thought they should have been in. They didn't deserve, given what they did on the field. Like, no one's arguing how talented Florida was last year. Like, they were uber talented. That's not that you're missing the point. If you think we don't think that they were good. But they hadn't deserved to be in, given what they had done on the field over the course of the year. And then they go make a super deep run into the postseason. You know, and people look at it, and it's like, well, you know, look what the bottom end teams are doing in these conferences in the postseason. Like, that, we got to have as many of them in there, because it's not fair leaving them out. But to our point as coaches and competitors, like, you didn't prove it on the field. There's a lot of other teams who went out there and had better seasons in a win-loss column, and they're left on the outside looking in.
That is true. Do we think, right, obviously the ACC and the SEC were the only representation in the College World Series last year. Do we think we see a continuation of just kind of the pure dominance of the SEC and the ACC? Like, have they completely separated themselves, or do we think the realignment here is going to shuffle things up a little bit? Like, what are our thoughts there?
Personally, I mean, my eight are ACC, SEC. But like, if you told me, you know, in 4 months or whatever it is when we do this, 4.5 months, Arizona's in, West Virginia's in, Oregon's in, obviously a mid-major, wouldn't shock me. What I would say is if it's not six combined from the SEC or ACC, I would be totally blown away by that. Like, I don't think you have three non-ACC SEC teams in Omaha, you know, in 4.5 months from now.
All right. Putting it out there for the universe. What are your thoughts on that, Keith?
I mean, I have 7 of 8 from the SEC, ACC. I don't think that I could be dead wrong, but I don't necessarily know that when we get down to Omaha that it's going to be not heavily loaded with the SEC and the ACC there.
Fair. Well, why don't we take that into our picks here? Kick it off, Coach Glass. What are your 8 right now?
My 8 in no particular
order, but this is the starter pack. What do we got?
My 8 to start the year in no particular order. I don't have these ranked in any order. It was just I was going through stuff and writing them down. But I have Arkansas, I have A&M, I have Wake, I have Tennessee, I have Florida State, UVA, Oregon State. And then probably my sleeper to get to Omaha. I know I didn't mention this earlier, but I think Georgia gets there this year. I think they build off of what they did last year, where they had a surprisingly really good year under their first year head coach. And I think they make some noise in the SEC and ultimately end up getting there.
Okay. Got a little crossover. What do you got, Jonathan?
I got Arkansas. Pretty self-explanatory. It would seem odd if, you know, the last person in Fayetteville didn't shut the lights off on their way up there. So, so Arkansas, LSU, I think LSU is absolutely loaded. I think what they've done is phenomenal. I have Clemson and UVA both in from the ACC. I have Texas A&M in. I think, again, first year head coach, chip on their shoulders, you know, people feel like Schloss left, you know, at the 11th hour, you know, kind of with, you know, like a thief in the night. I think they're going to have a chip on their shoulder with that group. I think he did also a phenomenal job with his staff in terms of bringing in the right people. I have Florida State in as well. I have North Carolina. And then I do have my favorite, the Gators, getting back to Omaha.
Okay. We got some discrepancies here. I kind of like this. So I went a little bit lighter SEC. I don't have any particular reason, but I'm going UVA. I don't know if any of you guys picked them.
I did.
Okay, sorry. I must have missed that. Apologies. I clearly missed that. I got UVA. I got Arkansas for two completely different reasons. I think UVA's offense is just a freaking juggernaut, and I think that Arkansas just – they're going to pitch it too much to not be in the mix. And I think they'll figure out a way to be better offensively this year. I got Oklahoma State and I got Arizona coming out of the Big 12. I'm pulling my chips into Kevin Vance bucket. I'm pushing them in for Arizona. I think they supplemented with the portal pretty well. I think that staff is really deep. I think they have a couple high end position guys that get them there. I got A&M, I got Oregon State, I got Wake, and then I think this is the year that Duke breaks through for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned up top, Jonathan. They're freaking old. They're super old and talented, and I think that's a unique mix in today's game. I mean, they've got a couple dudes in there who've been playing college baseball for 6 years that are really good players. They're not just like holdovers. Kids like Ben Miller, like the kids played a ton of baseball. So I think they're battle tested. I think they played a lot of really important games. I think they're going to break through this year. So that I wouldn't call them my sleeper pick. They're considered top 10, but I think that might be the team that gets there that's never been there before. Because I think every single team that everybody else on that list has been to Omaha. But I think they're the team this year that gets their first appearance. So left out some good ones like LSU. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't surprise me at all, but that's the direction I went.
I think one to look at, and I know I was on this train last year too, and you guys are going to laugh because I was on this train all last year. But I think Kentucky, there's people saying that Kentucky might be better this year than they were last year, which is pretty wild for a team the first time. That they were first time Omaha. I love your Arizona pick, but Kentucky, I had a few like first four out. Like at Kentucky, I think Tennessee is going to be interesting to look at. And again, I think that just goes back to what you guys were saying. I know I was the only one who had them in, but I think down year, win the Natty down year a little bit, not necessarily a down year, but down for them down year. I think they come back and blow the door right through. I love the Duke pick. I told you that earlier. And I think Vandy's going to be really good too. Again, I think, not that it's a shock that, right? Like I'm saying that, like, you're like, oh yeah, well it's Vandy. But I think Vandy comes back. I think their roster is really good. They got a bunch of older guys too. A couple portal guys. They got a shot to be all right. I think they're going to make some noise. And then, like I said, my fifth one, my star one was the Arizona. I think Arizona and West Virginia in the Big 12. Like if you told me they're in Omaha, I'm like, sounds good. Like very simple.
I think that Big 12 bounces back in a huge way this year. And I was talking to Eric about this, right? You've got some blue bloods up there, right? You got Oklahoma State, you've got Arizona who's won national championships not long ago, and they seemingly are back to being a legitimate national power. But there's a bunch of teams that I don't think are getting enough love out of that conference. I think TCU is primed to have a big bounce back year. I mean, you could argue that outside of Arkansas, that might be the most decorated program to not win a national championship over the last 20 years. I mean, they've been to Omaha five or six different times. Like, they've been on the cusp of it. Everybody seems to think that Kansas, this is the year that Kansas kind of announces their presence, kind of pulls a Kansas State, maybe sneaks up on some people. But I think that conference this year, they're kind of slating six. I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up finding a way to get seven in. And the Big 12 kind of is back up on the map, not being quite as top heavy as it's been. And I think moving forward, it could end up continuing to get deeper with schools like Kansas State establishing themselves. Kansas might jump into that conversation now. But you forget that like Arizona State's in that conference now, and they haven't been as good as they've been. But it's one of the most decorated programs in college baseball history. I think it's only a matter of time before they're a national name again. They still hold weight, but it's not the same program that, was in the national championship, was in Omaha quite a bit in the early 2000s. So I'm really interested to see if the Big 12 bounces back and is a six or seven bid team this year. This is six or seven bid league, I should say.
The one you made a really good point. All right, we had a player, and I'm a little biased to Kansas, so you can take this for what it's worth, but Kansas had the number one ranked junior college class this year. And we've talked about it on this show before, and obviously in a different setting, but those guys can play a little bit, and Fitz can coach. I think that's a really good call, and that might be – one of those ones where we're looking back in May and saying, man, how did, everybody miss on this team? Because I think they could have a shot to be really, really, really good. He knows what he's doing. He's a phenomenal head coach. He's a phenomenal recruiter. And for them to bring in the number one junior college class in the country, like, it's a big deal. And I think that's a really good pick. I think it's, you know, that's that next, you know, in that batch of that whole Big 12, like I said, West Virginia, Arizona, Oklahoma State, Kansas, even Kansas State again, right? Like, see what they can do on the back end. Arizona State, we'll see. But I mean,
you got Texas Tech, you got Central Florida.
Sure, yeah.
You got, I didn't mention West Virginia. Like, I mean,
TCU.
You got Houston, too. Don't forget about Houston. I mean, I know they've been down a little bit, but like, it's still Houston. Like,
TCU is in that conference.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you got the preseason on D1 baseball is Oklahoma State, Arizona, TCU, West Virginia, Kansas. And that's kind of who they have slated to get in. But you're missing Texas Tech. You're missing Arizona State. Central Florida was a regional team last year. Cincinnati has made some big strides recently. I mean, has played some really good baseball. You got Kansas State, who was a super regional team last year. I mean, after that, you've got some teams that need to prove themselves. You know, Utah has been okay. They are building a new facility and stuff. So, like, I don't know how much it impacts this year, but Baylor's had years where they've been fantastic. They've been in the College World Series, haven't been as good recently. And then you got Houston and BYU kind of rounding out the bottom. But I think that conference this year has a chance to be better than people may have it on paper right now. I think there's only two Big 12 teams in the top 25. It wouldn't surprise me to see three or four of them in the top 25 come to the end of the year and then maybe get that sixth or seventh team in. Any conferences you guys think that are usually one bid conferences that might end up being that could potentially be two bid conferences here this year?
I think we hit on before with the CIA, but I just think it's too hard, you know, with the way the veto committee has shown that they're going to value resumes, that for a lot of these other conferences to, you know, get more than one bid in.
What about the Big East? You think they could be a two bid team this year? Or do you think it takes UConn not winning the conference tournament for it to be a two bid team? Two bid league, I should say.
Yeah, probably. You're probably dead on with that. Yeah. You know, I mean, but again, it would have to be a UConn team. You know, not that they've been phenomenal for a long time, but like, unless they go to, you know, they play in Mason, Ohio, the tournament is like, unless they go to Mason and lay an egg, like, Xavier could, you know, maybe do it. I mean, Georgetown's really good. Georgetown's another one that's like kind of sneaky, has gotten really good really quick. But like, I just don't see a path where you're like, hey, you know, this team is going to beat UConn twice, you know, in a given weekend, or UConn's going to lose twice on a given weekend with what they've shown me the last two decades.
Fair enough.
The Sun Belt will be interesting too, because they're probably a step above the CAA, but same kind of thing. Like, the bottom end of that conference is, you know, not the best, but they, you know, in the top half just kind of beats each other up. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what, you know, with Louisiana Lafayette, Southern Miss, Troy, you know, JMU had a great year last year, ODU, Coastal, you know, Georgia Southern, I think, had a halfway decent year last year, if I remember correctly from the final standings. But, you know, same kind of thing. Like, I wonder, are they just a two-bid league, or with everything that's going to go on with these power conferences, do they shift down to the AQ and, you know, you're...
I personally think the Sun Belt's a one bit. I think it's a too good of a league. I think, we'd have to look at the numbers in the years past. I don't think they've been a one bit league though in some time.
I don't think they have been either.
I think that maybe the better question for them is like, could it be a three or even a four bid team, bid league? I think last year there was an argument to be made that three or four teams should have made it. But I mean, you're absolutely right, Keith. Like, there's six really good programs at the top of that league right now. I mean, ODU's been to they've been fantastic in recent years. Obviously, we talked about Troy. Georgia Southern's put together some really good teams. Southern Miss kind of speaks for itself. JMU was, you know, had a really good year last year. Like that's a really good baseball conference that probably doesn't get enough love because they're not as tied closely to college football. So it's not as easy to speak to them. They're not as recognizable, but that league is a juggernaut.
They had nine teams. I just pulled it up. They have nine teams that had at least 30 wins and two had 40.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really good baseball. And that's a gauntlet too, because the travel there is not easy either.
No.
The travel too is different than a lot of these other big leagues too. Like the budgets aren't quite what some of these other budgets are. So like you're throwing in a 9-10 hour bus trip where, you know, teams in the SEC or the ACC might be chartering a flight down there, you know, or up there, where some of those teams are jumping on a bus Thursday morning and bussing, you know, 12 hours down. So like, you know, not that their budgets are, you know, terrible, because they're not, but there's also that part of it too. This is like, this also isn't, you know, some of these, you know, some of these athletic departments don't have the money to just throw around like, you know, some of the big conferences do either.
No, that's true. That is very true.
But outside of those two, I don't know that there's another, or three, I should say, Big East, CAA, and Sun Belt. That everyone else is a one bid league. Just getting your AQ.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Maybe we'll get some surprises. You know, conference tournament time always can turn some things on their head. You know, Indiana State doesn't win the conference tournament or something like that. You know, you might end up with two, but no, I think you're right. Be interesting to see how it plays out. I think this is like the first big portal year,
mm-hmm.
right? Like in terms of, this is the first year you've seen guys move parallel. Right. You've seen SEC guys go to other SEC programs, which like you didn't see that before. You know, you got the I can't think of his name right now. Left-handed hitter who's down at Ole Miss, Fisher, who's going to go play for Tennessee. Like that stuff didn't happen before. So you've got this shuffle, like you got Louisville shortstop leaving a premier program to go play at Tennessee. Like there's that. And then you've got some of these low mid-major dudes jumping up. Like I know Wofford got hit by it. Our beloved Red Foxes got hit by the transfer portal with the Conrad kid going to Wake. Like there's more shuffling this year within college baseball. It's less like grad transfer stuff. It's more like underclassmen moving. I'm wondering how that might affect, because there are some teams that on paper look to be really, really good, right? They've supplemented guys that they've lost with transfer guys, but does it take them time to figure it out, right? Both from an individual perspective, but also from a team perspective. Cause you know, I do think that culture in college baseball plays a huge piece, especially when you get into these tight games and these big series, that guys who are battle tested, guys who've been in that environment before, I think it goes a long way. And I'm curious to see if some of these teams that dipped into the portal a little bit more than others, how quickly they're able to come together as a team and gel. And then also for the guys who are going from like the MAC to the ACC, how quickly can you get acclimated? Cause it's not the same game, right? It's a big difference between being really good in that conference and then having to grind out 15 at bats on the weekend against 90 to 94 with 85 mile an hour Snapdragons coming at you all weekend. So that's something I'm tracking. I'll be really curious to see how some guys get acclimated and see how quickly some of these teams can come together and do some of that culture stuff that I think ultimately moves the needle in the long run. Anything else you guys got for this evening?
I think the Ivy League will be interesting again. I think Columbia is probably going to be on a war path, given that they hosted the tournament last year and went 2-2. Penn went.
Don't mess with the Beretti scorned.
They're loaded too.
They're loaded.
They're gonna be really good.
So I think it'll be interesting, because you know, last year you had the, you know, Princeton had a really good year. Cornell ended up, you know, had a really good year. Penn had a, you know, for them a down year, but, you know, ended up winning the tournament and going to a regional. But Yale was better, you know, Harvard, you know, had a down year for them as well. So I think, like, you know, those teams will look to rebound. So I think the Ivy will be rather competitive again this year from a mid-major standpoint.
I think Harvard and Yale will both be significantly better this year. Harvard's got some guys on the mound that can really do it.
Yeah, the Ivy League's something to keep an eye on. I think a lot of people sleep on the Ivy League in terms of how good it is. It's interesting to look at some of the ACC rosters, and you see them littered with Ivy grad guys, which I think is pretty telling of the talent level there. I mean, you got the Hensler kid at A&M. You got Hayden Schott at A&M. We're both Ivy League guys. And then you look at Duke's roster, Ivy League guys. UVA's got a couple. I think that speaks to how good that conference actually is. And it's freaking really good baseball. And I think it gets slept on a little bit. Obviously, Jonathan, you coach there, and me and Keith are close to it for a variety of different reasons, but such good baseball. And I hope people spend some more time doing their due diligence on it, because it's a cool brand of baseball.
Yeah, it's awesome. And like you said, you know, you just see Duke, A&M, obviously, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, multiple kids, you know, doing grad years at, you know, some of the best schools in the world, and now playing in the top baseball conferences. You know, and some of the best, you know, I mean, shoot, A&M's in Omaha. Like, it just goes to show the brand of baseball in that league. And, you know, it shouldn't be slept on, because there's some dudes that play in that league, and it's a good brand of baseball.
That is correct. Any closing remarks? Any impromptu changes to your selections before we
No, I don't watch college baseball. That's what I'm gonna say. So if you're watching this, parent, player, whoever you are, go out and watch it. You know, I mean, even if you're busy, and, you know, I know how high school baseball works. If, you know, you're off on a Sunday, jump in your car and go watch somebody, you know, and it doesn't have to be Division One. I mean, obviously we highlight that, you know, but one of the things I love that we do is, you know, at the end of the year, is we highlight, you know, a lot of the smaller conferences to Division Two and Division Three. Go out and watch it. Just go watch it. You know, go see how good some of those players are. Because there's a lot of kids that deserve a lot of recognition that, you know, we try to give to them, you know, on this, but, you know, go and watch it. Go see how fast they are. Go see how big and strong they are. Because there's phenomenal baseball at every level, and you don't have to stay for the whole game, but go watch four innings, five innings of a game, and just go see what it looks like. Go, you know, go check out a college campus. But it's the one thing I tell people all the time is just go watch games. Go watch a game, because it's awesome. It really is.
Well put. Coach Glass, anything you want to close out with?
No. Can't wait to do this in the mid-year to see how right or wrong we are.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Jonathan, you're the man. Thank you. We'll do this again.
Thanks for having me again, once again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Tune in next week. Thanks, y'all. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMDBaseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on EMDBaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.